Hey everyone, welcome to No Planet B, a podcast where we're talking about climate change and its effects on planet A. I'm Brianna.
And I'm Wyatt. So this week we spoke to Veena Ramani, who's the Senior Program Director over at Ceres, which is a nonprofit company that works with investors and other companies to try to get them to see sustainability issues like climate change as financial threats. And they just recently released a report about the role of financial regulators in climate change in both adaptation and mitigation. And so here it is. So what is Ceres and its mission?
So Ceres is a sustainability nonprofit based here in the US. Our mission is to transform the economy to build a sustainable future for people and the planet. We want to try to get the economy to work for the health of the environment and for communities, rather than undermining this health. And this is because we believe that these are not contradictory concepts, right? So we believe that a healthy planet and healthy communities will in turn drive resilient, strong, and healthy markets. So we work with hundreds of companies through our company and policy networks. We work through hundreds of investors through our investor network. And these companies and investors tend to be some of the largest companies and network investors in the country. So we're talking about, you know, Pepsi and Coke, Bank of America and Citigroup, Ford and GM, Apple, Target, Amazon. So large guys. Mm-hmm. Investors that we work with are some of the largest public pension funds in the country, some of the largest asset managers in the country. So your Goldman Sachs, your BlackRock, your State Streets, your Vanguards. And our approach is to get these companies and these investors to address environmental and social issues as business risks and business opportunities, and to factor them into decisions that they make every day on things like strategy, on investments, and on expansions. In addition to working with companies and investors, we also work with policymakers and regulators to make sure that the rules that govern financial markets also factor in the negative impacts of issues like climate change, water scarcity, inequitable societies, so that any action that's taken by companies and investors is taken at scale.
Wow, I didn't realize you guys worked with such huge companies like Apple. Did you, Wyatt? I didn't realize that.
No.
We're all about punching above our weight.
Yeah, mm-hmm. For sure. That's super important. Ceres works with big companies like Apple to get them to consider climate change as a financial risk. What steps do you guys take to accomplish that?
We have a long history with many of these companies in particular, and we try to influence them through our one-on-one engagement with them. So we have relationships with many of these companies, with their top management, with their CEOs, and in some cases with even their boards. So we have the ability to be able to make that business case as to why action on climate change, and not just any action on climate change, action on climate change that's ambitious, that's clear-eyed, and that's aligned with the science on climate change is actually in their best business and financial interest. And we're able to then follow through on this business case with support and advice on things like goals they can set, policies that they can put in place, and systems that allow for issues like climate change to be addressed in decision-making across the enterprise. You want climate change to be a part of everything that a company does, the way, you know, making profits is a part of everything that this company does. Issues like cybersecurity are considered by companies, you know, as a part of every decision that they make. We think climate change is an issue that deserves that level of prioritization within an enterprise. You know, by moving these large companies, we sort of call them market movers. So the vision is, you know, where Pepsi and Coke go, the rest of the beverage industry will follow. But, you know, in addition to this approach, we support this by also trying to harness the power of investors to make the same exact business case to the companies that they own, right? So, again, you are starting to see this focus on climate change, this focus on sustainability, not just come from the socially responsible investment community, you know, religious investors, impact-oriented investors. These investors are critical, right? They are the ones who launched this movement. They continue to be on the cutting edge of the space. But what's been so interesting to me is that certainly over the past few years, we've seen the large mainstream guys whom you wouldn't really associate with sustainability on an environmental agenda, really jumping into the space, again, recognizing that environmental issues and social issues have financial consequences. So for instance, BlackRock is the largest asset manager in the world. It owns every major company out there. And for the past few years, the BlackRock CEO, Larry Fink, has issued letters to the CEOs and the boards of the companies that BlackRock owns, which is essentially most major companies in the world, reiterating that BlackRock considers climate change to be a material risk, to be a significant risk to financial markets writ large, and calling on these companies to disclose their climate change performance and to talk about how they're addressing climate change as a part of their strategies. Where companies are not paying attention to these public signals sent out by the BlackRocks of the world, other major investors in the world, investors are starting to follow through by taking action. And the action is things like dialogue with the companies they own. Large investors are able to access boards, CEOs, senior management of these companies, make their case to these individuals, to the management of the leadership of these companies one-on-one. They're also able to engage, access, and influence the boards of these companies. And again, where these dialogues don't bear fruit, you are seeing them follow through by filing shareholder resolutions on climate change, and in some cases, even voting against board directors of these companies that they don't see being proactive enough on climate change. And the third sort of stool, the third rung in our strategy, the third leg on our stool is regulatory and policy action. So at the end of the day, we don't just want this change, this espousing of climate change as a financial risk to happen among the largest companies. Large companies are important. We really want this to happen at scale. So this is where we think policymakers, regulators are critical to this conversation. So we are working right now with policymakers and with regulators to get them to issue rules and laws that will require that climate change be priced into decisions that are being made across the board by companies and investors. And so that climate is considered not just by individual companies and individual investors. Climate is priced in by financial markets writ large as a financial, a material, and even a systemic risk.
Yeah, so that basically, that goes into our third question. So Ceres just recently released a report about U.S. financial regulators and their role in a changing climate. What exactly should be their role in the face of climate change?
We believe that the risks associated by climate change are so severe that they don't just affect individual companies and individual investors. We believe that it is so severe that it has the potential to destabilize financial markets writ large. So we're living through an example of that right now, right? The coronavirus pandemic is a great example of a nature-based systemic risk that's really brought our financial markets to its knees, right? And we make the case that if left unmanaged, the potentials of the impact of the climate crisis could be as bad, if not worse. So where climate change is a systemic risk, it automatically becomes a part of the agenda. It becomes a part of the mandate of regulators who are responsible for maintaining financial market stability. Groups like the Federal Reserve, banking regulators like the OCC, the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, the FDIC, the Federal Deposit Insurance Fund. So the report we released in June calls on these financial regulators to take a series of 50 action steps to address climate change as a part of their mandate. But given that we don't have 2 hours to go through each of these recommendations, let me summarize our recommendations into four core buckets. The first thing we ask them to do is to affirm that they acknowledge that climate change does in fact pose a systemic risk. We believe this affirmation is important because it sends a really clear message to companies and to investors that financial regulators are paying attention to this issue as a financial risk. And we believe that this will incentivize the folks who are on the fence on whether to take action today or tomorrow to take that action today. We believe that's important. We then call on these regulators to integrate climate change into their supervision of key industries. So you have various kinds of regulators. Some regulators focus on banks. some regulators focus on insurance companies. You know, you have some regulators who focus on the mortgage market. We think climate change impacts each of these industries, and we call on those regulators to ensure that the industries that they supervise incorporate climate change into the way that they are thinking about how they do business, into the way that they think about climate change as impacting the business that they do and the strategies that they put in place. The third thing we call on regulators to do is to issue rules requiring every company to issue disclosures, to issue reporting, to issue transparency about their climate change performance. And that's because if you want to assess climate change as a risk, you need to have good information. And right now, we still don't have the kind of quality, decision-useful information at scale that's going to allow investors, markets, regulators to do a good job on assessing where the risks are and to take corrective action. So we believe that climate change disclosure is key. It's the fundamental first step to managing this issue well. And finally, we call on financial regulators to both cooperate with each other, to coordinate with each other, but also coordinate with the global community.
So what's been happening lately with financial regulators and climate change? Is there any news?
We have started to see movement, especially over the past 2 days.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, particularly from the Fed. It's pretty crazy. We've been pushing on these issues for a year. Certainly other groups have as well. But I think once the results of the election have become clearer, we've started to see financial regulators, particularly the Fed, take action extremely fast. So on Monday, the Fed issued its latest report on financial stability that recognized climate change as a material and significant financial risk, which is great. And it also noted that they were in early days of starting to think through how climate change might fit into their supervision process. The Fed also announced that they have applied to become a member of a group called the Network for the Greening of the Financial System, the NGFS, which is a global network of financial regulators working on climate change.
It's incredible to hear that initiative. Makes us really excited.
And just to really quick, because I have a question. You may have said it and I may have missed it, but when you say the Fed, is that the Federal Reserve Board?
That's exactly right.
Okay, gotcha.
So could we talk about some of the impacts of the climate crisis on U.S. financial markets specifically?
Sure. So climate change is seen to have two kinds of impacts on financial markets, physical risks and transition risks. So we see the physical risks of climate change playing out around us, right? That's what tends to be in the front of the public's eyes. And I will say the exacerbating, the worsening physical risks of climate change is really what has elevated climate change really in the public's eyes, certainly this year. So for instance, you know, we had the wildfires in the West, one of the worst wildfire seasons we've ever had. We are still going through one of the worst hurricane seasons that we've ever experienced in the Atlantic. We continue to have hurricanes and the season isn't over yet. We had devastating floods in spring in the Midwest. When these physical risks play out, businesses close, right? Things don't get produced. When things don't get produced, it means people are not able to work. When people are not able to work, it means they're not able to buy things. And these two trends, right, production and consumption are the bedrock of economies. And when production and consumption are affected, this in turn affects companies. It affects their value chain, their supply chain, as well as, you know, folks who buy things from them. It affects their investors. And then it sort of circles up into affecting the economy writ large. So that's the physical effects of climate change. Climate change also has what we call transition impacts. So this is what it means. Markets, companies, the economy, you're already starting to see that move or transition towards low carbon options. Investments are starting to move towards low carbon, clean, green options as compared to their counterparts. We're starting to see more and more lawsuits being filed against companies who are seen as being carbon polluters. We're starting to see technology move our world again towards, you know, cleaner, efficient, renewable options. And we're also starting to see laws and regulations globally as companies start to implement the Paris Climate Accord. But as these shifts start to happen, you are starting to see winners and losers. And the risks are not only to the companies who remain rooted in the fossil fuel foundation. There are also risks on financial industries, who financial players, investors, banks, insurance companies who are invested in these companies. There are also risks to workers who are employed by these companies. So the transition risk of climate change is not whether or not there will be a shift to a low carbon future. That is inevitable. It is about whether this transition is planned or orderly, or unplanned or abrupt. And for a planned transition, which is particularly needed now as our economy continues to be vulnerable because, again, we're still dealing with a pandemic, we need to see action on climate change happen right now.
So the two effects we had were physical and transition. Both inevitable, and both are going to be worse the more time you take to think about what you're going to do about those things. Is that part of your strategy at all when you're talking to these companies, is saying like, hey, the longer you take to think about these inevitable things, the worse it's going to get?
Absolutely right. Right. Ignoring a risk doesn't make it go away.
Yeah.
Right. It's I've seen climate change being described. You know, we've all heard of black swans, right? A black swan is this, you know, risk that nobody knew about that really sort of affected us and you know, affected us in ways that are particularly significant. Mm-hmm. I've seen climate change being described as something called a gray rhino. A gray rhino is a risk that everyone knows is coming, that everyone knows is going to come and bring us down to our knees, but no one wants to deal with it anyway, just because it's so large. So climate change is a gray rhino. And what we're trying to do is really get companies, investors, regulators, markets to, you know, really shake them out of the sense of either paralysis or inertia to get them to take action, and not only take action that's ambitious, action that's aligned with the science. If there's one thing that we've learned from the coronavirus pandemic, it's that any action that needs to be taken to combat a threat needs to be based on clear-eyed risk assessment and needs to be based on science. You know, the science on climate change shows us that the more we wait, what we need to do becomes more ambitious, becomes harder. So the sooner that we can act, the better our future is going to be.
So the longer we look at this rhino, the more upset it's going to get.
Yep.
I really like that metaphor. That's really nice.
I like it.
I also, talking about coronavirus, I really like the way that it seems like you all have taken on coronavirus as a way to help your cause. Because the way I would have maybe thought about it at first is, man, people are really preoccupied with coronavirus. How am I going to make them also consider climate change now? I like that, at least from what you've said so far, it's like, well, here's what we learned about from coronavirus, and here's how we can avoid that with climate change. I think that's just a really productive way to look at it.
And what's interesting, I mean, there's a few ways to think about the coronavirus pandemic, right? There's what can we learn about how to manage a systemic risk, a disruptive risk like coronavirus, right? What we're starting to see happen at the policy and the regulatory level, where, you know, we are starting to see global governments outside the US starting to weave those strands in of coronavirus relief with what needs to happen on climate change. So, for instance, the government of Canada made it a requirement to large companies who were getting relief as a part of their stimulus package associated with the pandemic, there was a requirement to have these companies also disclose their climate change performance. So, in other words, they folded in climate change criteria as a part of the package of relief given to companies who are starting to rebuild based on the effects they've had from the pandemic. And again, you're also starting to see stimulus packages in places like the EU, really folding in things like green infrastructure, climate change resilience as a part of the coronavirus pandemic relief packages. The interesting thing about both climate change and coronavirus is that the people who are most affected are the most vulnerable members of our community, you know, low-income communities of color. So, you know, as we start to figure out how to make these constituencies and communities resilient. We need to be thinking about it from a public health perspective, but we also need to be thinking about it from a climate change perspective.
Yeah, I love that.
Do you have any more examples of economies currently addressing climate change as a systemic risk?
We are starting to see a lot of global governments starting to address this issue. So if you remember a few minutes earlier, I'd laid out a series of four steps that we were looking for U.S. financial regulators to take. It was largely based on inspiration that we've gotten from the rest of the world. So, you know, the first thing we want U.S. regulators to do is to affirm the systemic risk of climate change. We're already starting to see, you know, governments outside the U.S. do that. I'd mentioned the Network for the Greening of the Financial System. So this is a group of over 70 global financial regulators who have affirmed that climate change is a systemic risk and have pledged to work with each other to figure out how to address this risk within their markets. We're also starting to see efforts by financial regulators, particularly central banks, to try to figure out, you know, how will the financial industry within our jurisdictions be affected by climate change? And they're doing this by conducting what we're calling, what they are calling climate change stress tests. So what does a health stress test tell us, right? If I don't know your audience, but I'm assuming it's younger. I got to tell you, man, when you're my age, when you're older than me, at some point your doctor's going to tell you to do a health stress test, right? Where they get you to run on a treadmill as a stressor to figure out how's your heart doing. The idea is, you know, we'll give them a sense of your overall health. And that'll help you figure out, right? Do you need to go on a diet? Do you need to exercise, et cetera, et cetera. So financial regulators are trying to do the same thing with large financial institutions, but keeping in mind climate change, using climate change as the stress factor. So many of them have outlined scenarios of climate change stress, including, you know, a disorderly transition, which I just talked about, or a hothouse scenario, which is a scenario where the physical risks of climate change have been unmitigated. And they're essentially having financial institutions run the numbers to figure out how they will do under these scenarios. Mm-hmm. And the results they find will help them identify where the fault lines are and what proactive action needs to be taken to improve the health and the resiliency of these large institutions. The third thing that we are seeing global financial regulators do is to require climate change disclosures. I just talked about Canada linking stimulus relief and climate change disclosure a minute ago. But we're also seeing jurisdictions like New Zealand, just last week, the UK, essentially require climate change disclosures from their large companies. And as I mentioned before, we are starting to see global regulators coordinate with each other through groups like the NGFS, the Network for the Greening of the Financial System, as well as through efforts like the Bank of International Settlements.
So we're looking at Canada and the UK as like examples of doing these, maybe these four steps, maybe all four of them. I know you mentioned at least like three and four, they're doing pretty well.
I think everyone's trying, a lot of countries are trying to do elements of this. So New Zealand, as I mentioned before, is requiring climate change disclosures. A number of countries are looking to do these climate change stress tests, including France, Japan, I believe Singapore is as well. Mm-hmm. And again, based on what we've seen from the Fed just over the past 2 days, I believe that many, many more central banks are likely earlier on in their processes, in their efforts to think through what climate change could mean. But I expect that most financial regulators are thinking about addressing this issue in some way or form.
I really like the four steps that y'all have, and kind of to make maybe a useless, but another health metaphor, it almost reminds me of like a bit of like therapy, where number one is like, okay, admit that you have this issue. Number two, work on it. Three, be open about it. And four, like use a support group to help you through it.
Hey, I really love that. But let me throw another therapy term at you. Cognitive okay. Right? Yeah. Cognitive dissonance is like, you know, the fact saying X, but you don't want to acknowledge those facts. So you're going to function in your sense of false reality, just hoping that everybody else was wrong. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, financial markets writ large, you know, were in a little bit of a situation of cognitive dissonance. you know, certainly over the past decades, the science associated with climate change has been clear for a while. The impacts on companies, on investors, on markets has been out there for a while. We're not doing anything that's new. I think what Ceres is doing is bringing the resources together. We're really trying to amplify it, we believe, to the constituencies whom we hope will make a difference. But the fact that this research is out there and no one's acted on it, I feel the whole world is sort of in the grip of cognitive dissonance. And as the risks become clearer, our ability to ignore reality is going away, thank God.
This was wonderful. Thank you so much for being on.
Awesome. Thanks so much.
Yeah. Have a good one. And you made it to the end of the interview. Thank you so much for listening. Don't forget to share or leave us a review. We also have a TikTok now called No Planet Bcast, I believe. Our Instagram and Twitter are the same name. We're trying to be more active on all these different social media avenues. And yeah, thanks for being here. Thanks for sitting down and taking the time.
They might not be sitting. I wouldn't assume that. But yeah, thanks. Mm-hmm.
Of course. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you on the internet.